You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You're going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by ContinentalMLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, hanging out in the green room, David Goss, Matt Doyle. It is Monday. It is the off season. Preseason has kind of started, but I'm a little bored. Yeah, I'm a little bored. I'm like, you know, we got the U.S., we got Berhalter, game one. We got Sebastian Jovinko, like, Willie Wonty. We got Kaku.
So what's boring?
I just need some, I need like, CCL. I need some actual game action. I feel antsy. I feel like I hasn't been here for a while.
You didn't wake up and immediately watch your guy, Sardar Usman. Osmond get
guy?
Crushed.
I was sending
by Japan.
You alerts about Sardar Usman.
Yeah, who's garbage.
Oh, wow. Ooh, Vancouver
sometimes,
Whitecaps
sometimes
fans.
When you get stuck out on an island, you just got to double down.
Yeah, go right
did
back
you,
down.
Did you not watch like 16 hours of soccer yesterday? I watched.
I did, but it's not the same. It's
you
not
watched
the
16
same.
Hours?
Not 16 hours. I think I watched 14 hours.
What was your run?
What was the first Bundesliga game in the morning?
I don't know. So you started Bundesliga.
I think it was Bayern.
I started something at 8 that was before Bundesliga.
So when you trust his soccer opinions, remember, he doesn't even know what game he watched.
There was a La Liga game.
There was a La Liga game, right.
Was it the Girona-Barca game?
I think so. No, that was on at 10:15. There was one on before.
Well, what an engaging day that you had.
I'm actually super jealous.
I watched Tyler Adams for 2 hours. He was great.
That was great.
Then there was the late La Liga game was Madrid, and that ran right into Liga MX.
Instead of getting your breakdown here of all the games you watched, before we get to Greg Berhalter and his first game in charge of 3-0 win against
Anthony Davis to the Knicks.
We could. We've already done that. We have all our takeaways from that. We've got Adrian Heath, the forward whisperer, unless, of course, you're one of those OG Minnesota fans who thinks that he can't do anything right because of Christian Ramirez. He joins
Shout
us
out, Wes.
Yeah, in the bump here to talk about coaching forwards in this league, in his previous life as a coach, in his life as a player. We also have Ben Olsen. He's going to walk you through what it's like to be on the inside of a club that means so much to you, that you've been around for the better part of 2 decades plus, to see it revitalized right in front of your eyes. Ben Olsen on DC United in 2018. Of course, we've got all the MLS news going on. Sebastian Jovinko, will he go to Saudi Arabia? Will he not? Would it be a good thing if he did for Toronto FC? Terrence Boyd. I know that's like a deep cut ETR reference. The turtle's name is Frankie, in case you forgot.
You forgot.
I didn't forget.
There's no way you remember.
I remembered. Nice. Of course I remember. Come on. Frankie the turtle. Plus, what should the Red Bulls do with Kaku? And then the Fire are making signings. But it's an open question as to whether they're inspiring or not. Then we hit the mailbag. Got some good stuff there. Before we get to U.S., I need like a minute from you, Doyle, on how you spend your weekends. Like, is it a... I only gave you a minute because I didn't know how compelling it would be.
It's not. No, it's not super compelling. It's just not.
It's a bottle of whiskey and a television.
It's yeah.
Well, and a laptop.
And a laptop. And sometimes a phone. And, you know, my wife is both a soccer and internet junkie as well. So she'll sit there and watch with me. And the cats, of course, cats are there. There's a lot of that. Usually involves a couple trips to the gym, you know, just so I don't die of heart failure by 45, which is, you know, distinct possibility. But, yeah, I mean, that's basically it. Oh, and we were cat sitting this week. So we had to walk a mile to Joe and Alex's place to say hi to Ruby.
Mm, what a wonderful
weekend. You don't bring the cat to your place?
We're thinking about it.
Nice.
They have a great cat. She's a cute little tuxedo cat. A lot of personality. She could use a big sister and a big brother.
So for you, last night after I had
what I'm saying is that I'm going to steal my friend's cat.
I think everyone's in favor of that.
Okay.
Because you're such a good cat person. Last night after having a very un-Matt Doyle weekend, I went to a barbecue place and spent over $100 on meat.
I like that, actually.
Yeah. That was very American of you.
So that's an alpha move right there.
I felt disgusting and then got home and started eating the leftovers immediately and then woke up to this morning and ate them cold and they were still good.
Are you a brisket guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. On that note, I'm going to go ahead and transition us right into Greg Berhalter's first game. Obviously, a very scintillating weekend for all of us. My kid took his first steps. So
no, were we supposed
no.
to
ask?
You know, right is that why you asked us?
Right
so
as
that
I tried to transition.
You?
No, not intentionally, but I had to bring it back around. Okay, Greg.
Tell
Berhalter.
Us about it, Andrew. It's so interesting.
15 feet or so. Pretty well done. It was Corey Baird-esque run, I would say, in between the lines there.
Mm.
Let's talk soccer. Let's talk U.S.
He's already better than half the center backs the Galaxy played last year. So there you go.
3-0. That's a good thing. Results are good. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see a team play well. And we're just kind of getting our first taste here. And obviously, Greg Berhalter only had a certain amount of time to really put his stamp on this game, on this team. But I think he did it in a lot of ways, or at least the beginnings of it, to where you can kind of see where he wants to go. It's been since, I think, late October or 2016 sometime, late 2016, since we had a full-time coach that we were like, this is our coach. He is here. He can implement ideas. We didn't know whether we agreed with the ideas at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now we're coming to terms with the ideas that Greg Berhalter has, and they seem great. What did we see in this game? What did you like?
I mean, a lot of the stuff that Berhalter said he was going to show us when he was here in December, he talked about using the ball to disorganize the defense, the opposing defense, which we saw. He talked about building from the back and being a possession-heavy team, which we saw. The U.S. had 66% possession. He talked about breaking the lines by passing the ball, splitting defenders and playing to pockets in between the lines. We didn't see a ton of that, especially the first 25 minutes. There was a toddler learning to walk aspect to how the U.S. were playing. But I thought that got better over the course of the game. Walker Zimmerman and Michael Bradley both were excellent at that from the jump, but I think everybody else struggled, like I said, for the first 25 minutes. We thought it was going to be push both fullbacks way up high. We thought it was going to be whoever the central, the defensive midfielder is, dropping between the center backs to hit those long sweeping diagonals to the overlapping fullbacks. We didn't see that last night. We saw a different formation. We saw a different structure, different responsibilities for the fullbacks than we got used to in the crew with the crew, and then we got used to in terms of watching the modern game. That was the really big tactical wrinkle, but it all added up to a really strong and I think a really positive debut for Greg Berhalter as a U.S. national team head coach.
Georgi Mikhailovich with the goal in the 40th. That is his first as a senior national team. He was making his debut as a starter. Five starters made debuts. Jeremy Abobase did as well on the left wing. That didn't really work out. We'll get to that in a bit. Corey Baird on the right wing. Daniel Lovitz at left back. And then Nick Lima at right back / central midfield, depending on when the U.S. had the ball. Berhalter said that he thought Lima was the man of the match. Had an assist, had some good moments, pushed it forward, played a little bit of an unorthodox role in that position. Just in case you missed it here, Jesse Zardes did get the start up top. He did not get a goal, but Christian Ramirez did late on after Jonathan Lewis came on and drove past the entire back line and put it right on his foot. That was easy enough. Walker Zimmerman with the goal himself off a set, well, no, off of a nice early ball from Nick Lima after turnover
what
that they pushed it around.
That
great
was.
Ball. Great
no,
ball.
Tackle I mean, to cross.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the goalkeeper coming out there and flailing a little
bit? I mean,
bit,
that's the thing. Like, if you drive across that well and that hard, like, that, he didn't loft that in. He drove that in. Makes it much harder for a goalkeeper.
What'd you like?
I like Nick Lima. I thought he played really well. I thought he was adventurous with his passing. I thought he was clean on the side. I liked that he was creative with his number 10s because he kept – He told Sebastian Salazar at halftime.
Can we not call them number 10?
But he said, but he did.
I don't care what he called
them. But that's the point is, Doyle likes to talk about a number 10, which is Riquelme, which I love as well, but it doesn't exist. And Higuain was that player for him at the crew. And everyone said, well, how can he do it here with the U.S. if he doesn't have that player? And the reality of it is, you can use that position in different ways. And Roldan's going to play it completely differently, right? He's going to move the ball with himself. He's going to connect quickly. He can cover a lot of ground. And Mihailovic, I thought, was really good, but less with the ball and more just the runs, which came out in the goal. But this team was geared to come down the right wing. They clearly understood that either they had an advantage or that's where they were at their best, which I think is why Abobase kind of – it's unfair to say he had a bad game because Lovitz wasn't pushing forward. He wasn't – they weren't really playing through the left side of the field. They were playing through Roldan as the right-sided number 10, Baird on the wing and Lima coming into that space as well. And then Mihailovic and Obobese were supposed to make the runs to finish off that, which is what they did. And they should have done more, by the way. Mm-hmm. I thought Baird was good, but had two or three times where he came into the box, could have easily cut back to someone and just kind of hit it into a space.
They weren't clean. And we should all be used to that in January camp. Every year we see these guys try to knock off the rust. I thought they did mostly a very good job of knocking off the rust. I want to read a quote from Berhalter, because what you were saying is, like, they were clearly designed to attack down the wing, specifically the right wing. And this is what Berhalter said. Some of the movements we're working with is on the wings, very complicated movements. It involves three players interchanging and still with the intention to disorganize the defense and get behind their lines. You could see that sometimes we were a bit tentative with that. And then there were other times where it came off and it was really nice. So I think there were elements. And the first goal is a perfect example of that. It's a very complicated movement. Roldan drops back to win the ball. The U.S. always had numbers up in central midfield. It was total opposite of the Trinidad and Tobago game a year and a half ago. So they always had numbers up in central midfield because Roldan is so cognizant of that. And Lima was pushed in there, and Bradley's not going anywhere. So they had the numbers up. They won the ball. Lima gets on it, drives forward. He makes that nice sort of like no-look pass where he looks out wide to Baird, and he freezes the defender with that, and then he slips it in to Zardes. Zardes, whether he meant it or not, stumbled over the ball and plays it right into Baird's run around the edge at this point, and then pull back for Mihailovic. Like, that is a – obviously there's natural talent and in-the-moment instinct and all that right there, but that is a design play. That is something that they work on in training, and to see it come off and result in the game-winning goal, the first goal of the game, it's heartening. I believe now, for the first time since 2011, there is a tactical plan for this U.S. team that they work on in practice and can get better at. And the stuff that they are better at on Tuesday, they will apply on Saturday, and they'll work on it again the following Tuesday and try to get better still so that they're even better at it the next game.
And when he says not all of it came off, there was a lot of moments where players were crossing and you couldn't tell if it was a long touch or a pass.
Yeah.
And at moments they couldn't tell if it was a long touch or a pass. But as you said, as you practice that over and over again, that stuff gets more comfortable. I wonder, when you look at the U.S. pool now, what personnel fits into those spots well. And I thought Ramirez, I know he scored and it was 7 minutes, but he has a clean first touch. He likes to lay the ball off. He likes to find his teammates quickly. That's a good instinct to have in this setup.
I like the communication. Seems like from a very basic, you know, like wide point standpoint here.
Of just
he's
like
communicating.
Just watching him talk.
Yes,
to the bench
and
the
hearing what
game.
He says and like what he said about Kellen Acosta, and it was harsh a little bit. He's basically saying he just wasn't prepared to contribute at the level we need him to physically. But the way he said it and that he said it and that you know he said it to Kellen Acosta, I mean, it feels like, again, that's that fresh start we're talking about. And I think Greg Berhalter has the luxury of sitting back and watching the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or longer go down and say, these are all the things that I thought I would do differently this entire time. These are all the things that I sat back in the cut and said, you know what? Ooh, this could be better, whether it be behind the scenes with his team, whether it be how they train, whether it be how they prepare for games, or whether it just be how he communicates in the media. Because he does have a job in addition to winning games, and it is reinvigorating this fan base. And winning games will go a long way. That is the primary method of doing that. But I also think people have just kind of felt beaten down by this idea that, you know, we're outside all the time. There's no looking in. There's no identifying. There's no understanding what you're seeing. There's no feeling a connection to what's happening on the field outside of the big kind of grand points of will we make the World Cup. I just felt like last night was the first time in a long time where I watched the game and I said, I picked out 3 or 4 things here and I have an expectation that the next time the U.S. play, they'll still be there.
The stuff that we saw actually meant something.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have to be completely nihilistic about watching the U.S. men's national team. We could see something and be like, oh, that actually might mean something long term. Now, maybe he doesn't get all creative with the right back or the left back in the future. Maybe he decides, like, you know what, we're better off if we go a more straightforward 4-3-3 than this sort of Man City-esque type of inverted central midfield fullback. Maybe that's not our future, but he like you look at him looking at it and you get the impression like he's thinking about it.
Yeah.
He's going to apply it for good or for bad, and that's totally different. Like since 2011, man, we've had friendlies and like nothing has meant anything.
Although I'll tell you this, this has nothing to do with anything, but it was funny. They said Obobese started on the left cuz he liked the way he crossed with his left. That was exactly what Jurgen Klinsmann did in his first game with Paco Torres. And everyone was like, why are you playing this guy on the left? And he's like, well, it was a good crossing. Because, like, Jurgen had never watched an American player play at that point. That's an exaggeration. I apologize for that. But still, probably had never seen Paco Torres play. So that was just
you
one little
Gringo
moment.
Torres?
Yeah, what did I say?
Paco.
Yeah, who's Paco Torres?
I don't know.
Good try there. But, like, I like that he tried it. I like that he did something a little different. I'm okay with him doing that because I have faith that he'll look at this game critically and say, that worked. That didn't. And he'll communicate with Obobese, and it won't just be kind of like, hey, that was weird. I played left wing. What's the future for me now? Or Nick Lima, or you know the other right backs that are in camp that didn't get to play, or the guys that came in. Sebastian Legette came in and changed the game. Jonathan Lewis came in and changed the game. And look, this isn't the first team. It's not, you know, what was it? He said he didn't want people to call it like a C team.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I mean, again, he understands kind of the way his words matter, not just to the outside world, but inside that locker room. So let's take a look at this 11, and let's try to see how we can tweak and change it with the players that would be available, because there you have Tyler Adams, and I look at Tyler Adams, and I'm not in the Doyle camp of go play him a right back, but he could have done a pretty good job in that sort of position that Lima played,
where he's
tucking in possession, and he's able to put out fires if he has to, because physically he's better than everybody else. That's interesting. Does Michael Bradley stay if this is a World Cup qualifier?
Michael Bradley was excellent. Michael Bradley was excellent last night. And I think with Michael Bradley, if you put him in a situation where there's structure, he's almost always going to be good. And that's what we saw. What was interesting is Berhalter really curtailed his role. He really – the definitive thing about Michael Bradley for the past 12 years has been – every coach that we've had has tried to ask him to do 15 different things on the field at once. And that's not what Berhalter said. Berhalter wanted him to sit in front of that back line and to break passes with his distribution. And that's all Michael Bradley did. Michael Bradley's really good at that. Tyler Adams isn't there yet, I don't think. And I suspect that's one of the things that Berhalter will be watching Tyler Adams for in the Bundesliga. Adams was really good, but he didn't do it like that. He does it by pressing the ball, winning the ball, and then making simple outlet passes. So we could see Adams there, like maybe within 6 months he develops it, because right now his improvement curve is amazing. But right now, I think if you're going to put Adams on the field, it's going to be in that Nick Lima role.
All right, let's just go through it here. Right. Zach Steffen?
Yeah, he's the guy.
He's the number one right now? That's the dude?
Good, let me just say, Ethan Horvath is playing really well in Europe right now. Ethan Horvath cannot distribute. And as we saw last night, the U.S. are going to need their goalkeepers to be good with their feet and good in distribution.
And Steffen looked really good
last
night. I mean, they
other than that one throw, which was ridiculous.
Right. But with his feet, they put him under pressure at moments. And the U.S., there's – I see two ways when teams try and play out of the back. One is they play to survive. Everything is we're about to lose the ball, and when you play out of the back, you don't create an opportunity on the other end. And the other way is the way when you do it on purpose, which is come pressure us because then we can find our openings. The U.S., every time Panama pressured them, had a good break going the other way and looked comfortable.
Daniel Lovett's at left back. I don't think anybody's out here stumping for him to be the full-time starter. But look,
his debut was fine.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. And sometimes that's all you need. Who could fill in that spot? Who is potentially number one in that spot? It is a problem position. There's no doubt about it.
It is a problem position. I mean, Anthony Robinson, I think, is still the young player that people look at with a lot of upside as a left back, but not in the way that Lovitz played it last night. He wasn't an overlapper last night. He was a possession hub. If you want to look within MLS, the young player who I think stands out as checking all the boxes, at least on the field, is Danny Acosta. And I think that if he hadn't really messed up his career with some off-the-field stuff last year, Danny Acosta would have been at this camp and would have been starting. So he's got to get his head on straight and hopefully do the job for Orlando City this year. But it's an open question. It's absolutely an open question. Greg Garza would be a fairly easy choice if he could stay healthy. If nobody steps up, I kind of trust Ari Viafani in that role. But this is definitely the sore spot on the roster right now.
None of the names you say are inspiring, and I think that's okay because I think there's a class right now of left backs coming through that's too young and might be too young for 2022, and that's going to be a fill-in spot until Bello and Chris Gloucester and whoever else comes through there is ready
Kobe
to go.
Kobe Hernandez, the kid for LA. Yeah.
Do we think George Bello is too young for 2022? Because that was going to be my name. If you're looking at 2022,
I'll tell you this. If over the next 2 or 3 years you create a formation or you have a player at right back who you think can be a difference maker going forward and you want possession and solid play from your left back, then George Bello probably won't be your guy.
Right.
If you say, I want both my fullbacks to bomb forward and attack is the key for them and we have a great defensive midfielder or two and two center backs that can cover for them, then George Bello might be your guy right. Where you say, I just need athleticism, I need attacking intent, and I need push.
I don't think Bello's that athletic. He's not like a track star. I think he's more like he's just a smart player.
Well,
he's not
just speed. He's an off-the-charts athlete, like when you see
him. In terms of balance and agility.
And size and strength and all of that.
So I'm thinking less about 2022 and more about the Gold Cup. I'm thinking about the next 6 months with this because what
Berhalter – All right, let's do this under the guise of the Gold Cup.
Okay.
Because 2022 is just so far away. It's like you're just speculating at that point as to where these guys will go and what they'll do. There's a little bit less speculation here, so let's stick to Gold Cup.
I would say Tim Ream. Because Tim Ream is not really a center back, and he's proved it repeatedly for the U.S. national team, and he's not really quite a fullback, but he's really good in a back three, and this is essentially left center back in a back three. If you're going to have either Lima or Adams as the right fullback / central midfielder, then I think you probably play Tim Ream as the left center back because you don't need overlapping. You need a guy who can pass the hell out of the ball and defend a little bit, and that's what Ream is.
I think Jonathan E. Brooks at center back, still, despite some of the nervousness about him at times with the U.S., is still pretty solidly, I would guess, number one on that list. We'll have to wait and see what Greg does once he gets in this position to play him. Between Aaron Long, who captained this team against Panama, and Walker Zimmerman, who made the most out of this particular opportunity? Now, it says something about Long that he got the captaincy after this long camp. With the names that were in there, with the fact that he hasn't really been with the U.S. a lot in the past, with the fact that he really just emerged in the last 2.5-3 years or so. Who did more for themselves in this camp, in this game? Obviously, they have another opportunity. Both basically 26.
Well, Zimmerman clearly did, but the way the team was set up was for him to do that. The way this team was set up was for him to fill in that space, to move forward, to be on the ball, to break lines with his passing, where for Long and on the left side of the field, it was more to just maintain possession, break pressure when it came, but otherwise to find Bradley's feet, to find Zimmerman's feet to push in, which he did well. And as you said, was given a level of trust from Greg Berhalter. Neither of them had a bad game. Neither of them, I think, made a mistake.
Which I don't think you expect them Zimmerman to have in a game like this, right?
Zimmerman had one mistake, I think, midway through the second half where he tried to play, again, through the lines, 2 feet, and he really telegraphed it.
And he gave it away, yeah.
Yeah. But that was, like, his only mistake of the game, and he was pushing the tempo. I thought Zimmerman made the stronger case, but that was because he went out there and played a really active role, whereas Long's role in the team because of the team that we were facing and because of just the structure of the formation was a little bit more passive.
Gold Cup. Maybe it's two.
Right now they're both on the team.
Yeah.
So
CCV is getting called back from another loan stint in England. He's going to have to go on a different one. Miazga's at Reading.
Right.
It's not working out. So there's two guys that were kind of in that middle ground between conceivably
CCV
these two.
CCV can't pass the ball at all.
Okay.
He can't pass the ball at all. Like
Cameron Carter-Vickers is who they're talking about. By
at best, he is fifth on the depth chart. Right now, I still think it's Brooks and Miazga, Long and Zimmerman. I'm not convinced Brooks and Miazga are necessarily numbers one and two, but we're still a long way from the Gold Cup.
Okay, right back. Nick Lima, I think, had a great performance. And obviously, they had a good camp because Keegan Rosenberry and Reggie Cannon did not get the start over him in this sense. Maybe it's because of the role they were asking him to play. Regardless, I think he's one of those players that, unless you're a true MLS nerd, you might not be on him yet. But he trialed in the Bundesliga, or at least trained with Hertha Berlin this offseason and reportedly impressed. He's been good for San Jose, despite them being bad. Those things happen. Right back, you have DeAndre Yedlin. In Matt's mind, you have Tyler Adams.
By the way, Tyler Adams was just named the Bundesliga Player of the Week.
Wow.
Yeah. Man of the Match Day, according to the Bundesliga official website.
Have to go check out Kicker for the ratings there. We'll get to Tyler in just a second, obviously.
Well, so I think the jury's still out on the position, if that's what you're asking. Well, that is what we're talking about, even for this Gold Cup. One of the names I'd throw in there, though, if you're going to play this way, would be Paul Areola.
Yep.
Because if you're saying push in field and be on the ball a lot and cover ground, why would he not be in that conversation even more than a guy like Yedlin?
I agree, and I think the answer is, well, he's playing as a winger for DC United. So, like where you play for your club, I think it's going to matter for Greg Berhalter, maybe more than it did for Bruce Arena or certainly Jurgen Klinsmann. So I think that's the answer there. But certainly Areola has that skill set. The question I would ask is, do Yedlin and Reggie Cannon have that skill set? Neither of those guys – like, I like Cannon a lot as a two-way, you know, pretty modern fullback, and I think he has an international future there. I don't know if I want him getting the ball in central midfield and making the type of plays that Lima had to make. Like, I've never seen him make plays like that. I'm pretty convinced Yedlin can't do it. If we keep playing that way, it does become a really open question that maybe some unexpected faces are going to answer.
But
midfield.
Well, sorry.
Before I let you go too far down that.
No, I'm not going down that. I'm just saying, do we think this is what it will look like?
I think that Greg Berhalter is going to experiment.
I agree. So that's why I'm saying if it's Pulisic on the wing who wants to come infield, how do you know that he's not going to bring a fullback who wants to get wide? And at the same time, if he has Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie that he can choose from, how do we know he's not going with a double pivot or putting someone else in there maybe as one of the quote-unquote two number 10s who covers that ground instead of Lima?
So build me that midfield in an ideal world, and generally things will be built around it. You come into a World Cup qualifier or you come into the Gold Cup, you play who right now? Who do you think the best group is? You have Weston McKennie, who,
yep,
according to reports, is getting sniffs from the biggest clubs in the world, yep, and is doing the same thing Tyler Adams has done, where he goes and hits the field, and you're like, he might be the best player out there right now.
I mean,
that's a good place to be. It's been a while.
Yeah, like if you want me to build the, you really want my best 11 if we had a qualifier tomorrow.
Build it, and then we'll go to the break.
Stefan in goal.
I guess I would go with Brooks and probably Long in center back. I just trust him a little more than I trust Zimmerman. I guess I would go Ream, and I think I would go Lima as a fullbacks. I would go Adams in the Bradley role. And I know that there's reason to think that maybe he can't quite pull it off, but there's also reason to think that he can. I would go with McKennie in the Roldan role.
You gonna put Pulisic in the centrally, or are you gonna?
That's the question, right?
Yeah,
I think I would. I think I would have Pulisic on the left, inverted, so he can go directly at goal, kind of in the way that Jonathan Lewis did. I would have probably Wea on the right, playing the role that Corey Baird did. I would have Sargent as the center forward.
If you had to win a qualifier tomorrow.
I would probably have Josie.
Yeah.
I would probably have Josie, yeah. I don't know who I would have as the number 10.
So, piggybacking on this, if I'm looking at this and what you're going with,
I thought Legette was better than Mihailovic. Georgie got the goal. He's really good off the ball. He doesn't complete meaningful passes, and he's not as good receiving the ball. I would have Legette as the number 10, maybe flip-flop him with Pulisic a little bit.
I would have Bradley in there, and I would have Tyler and Weston ahead of him in those two number 10 roles.
And you would just go crazy with the press.
Yeah, and yep. Bradley can cover all the space behind and read where Tyler's pressing and fill in where he needs to and can cycle possession.
All right, that's our 11. Got another game in a week, so
I could do this for another hour.
A lot of time to think about it. Yeah, we're going to break. On the other side, in between, I should say, Adrian Heath, forward whisperer. We'll be right back. 10 minutes with Minnesota United head coach Adrian Heath. Starts now. Coach, how's it going?
Good, good. Got a terrible cough. Can't get rid of it, but apart from that, I'm okay.
So what you're saying is you're going to spread that illness to every other coach.
Hopefully passing it on to you guys.
Yeah. Their scouting goes down the drain. You've got an advantage
there. No, you'll pass it on to like Ben Olsen probably.
Good.
We want to talk to you about center forwards.
Okay.
And I guess we can just start with how you look at the position and how you look at the players that both you've coached and you admire from afar. So when you think very generally about this idea of a goal scorer,
yeah,
what comes to mind?
Well, I think it's first and foremost, it's the most important position on the field because that's why they go for the most money. Biggest transfers, invariably highest paid. So it's a special art, and I think you can get better at it. I think there are things that you can work on to give yourself more opportunities, to maximise the opportunities that come. But I honestly believe as well with certain players, it's this little, they've just got something inside them, they can sniff the position, know where to land. But I think that if you land in certain positions in the box regularly enough, and you're working with a group you work with regular, then you certainly give yourself more opportunities.
When you scout a forward,
uh-huh,
we can all see the ball go in the back of the net. That's obvious. What are the little things that you look for? What are the little kind of trade craft
movement,
things?
Movement away from the ball, not always towards it. Timing. You know, I've worked with kids who get the run and know what I'm asking of them, but their timing of it is either too early or too late, and that is the biggest problem with them. You know, arriving at the you know, optimum position at the right time is key to everything. If you look at David Villa, is probably good as you will ever see at it. Pulling off the back shoulder, when defenders start to drop with him, then he gets across the front of him. And it's all about timing and movement. You know, that you wouldn't say that David Villa is the quickest foot forward there's ever been. Yeah, he was sharp, but he was sharper in his mind. That was the difference maker for him.
How do you train those things then? If you have a player who maybe doesn't have it perfectly, how do you work on it?
Well, I think it's a lot of repetition. It's about timing. It's about understanding where you want to finish at the end of the play. Now, what time you're going to get there? Now, we always work on... It was funny because one of my ex-players was here today, last night in the bar, and we were talking about it, and he's now starting to coach, and he's just going over the same stuff that I did for him for maybe 4 years, about one for the defender, one for me. So sometimes you run away from where you want to go knowing that you're going to end up in the right spot. But that comes with a little bit of experience, but it comes with actually watching and learning. You know, I've got like videotapes that I've shown to Kyle Larin. I'm working with Mason Toy now, we did with Dom Dwyer. And, you know, the principles of that don't change. It's about the timing of where do you think that ball's going to go. Now, some people are better than others at actually understanding that, but you can get better at it if you understand and listen.
Who's the best natural you've been around in that sense? All these little pieces. Who's the person that you were just like, good God?
Kevin Phillips. When I was working at Sunderland, he got the golden boot, and Kev was unbelievable at being at the right spot at the right time. And, it's all about being patient. It's... You know, knowing that there's a certain parts of the penalty area where the ball goes more often than not. You know, I had an ex-England manager, Graham Taylor, once said to me, if you arrive at the back post consistently, you will get 5 to 10 goals a season just by people dragging shots across the goals, stuff coming off the goalkeeper. Now, you watch it. I do video of every goal from nearly every league every weekend. The amount of stuff that just spills out and goes on the back post, end up there. Consistently try and get there, and the good thing about striking is obviously you get the glory of doing it, but people forget that people probably make 8 or 9 runs for the one time that it does come, and I guarantee you the time that you don't do it, that's when the keeper spills it or somebody drags it across the goal. And so it's, you know, it is an art, and that's why they go for so much money, but you can get better at it and you can work at it.
You named 3 domestic forwards who you've worked with and had success with. Kyle Larin, of course, being the biggest, but Christian Ramirez as well. But you've worked, obviously, in England,
yeah,
where you're from. You watch players from,
yeah,
all over. Is there any difference between domestic forwards, domestic young forwards, and what you've worked with and seen from around the world?
I think it's slowly changing because of the academy system now. I think young players now are getting the advantage of better coaching earlier. Like I look at one of my guys in Orlando here, Dennis Chin, who never really made it. But I know if I could have got my hands on Chinny when he was 10 or 12 years of age, he would have played in Europe. But he was always playing catch-up because by the time I get him, he's 23. And he starts to learn it, but then he's running out of time on the other end, you know, by the time he's sort of honed his craft. So, you know, the younger ones now are getting the benefits of the change in the academy system and the investment within the youth development program.
we look at the all-time scorers for the U.S. national team, and you don't see a whole lot of number nines on that list. You don't. And there seem to be more coming up through those ranks. Let's just take a Dom Dwyer, for example.
Uh-huh.
When you got your hands on Dom Dwyer
on
loan from Kansas City, he hadn't really played. He was trying to find himself, and he exploded.
Yeah.
What did you have when you got him? When you got him? And what did you focus on with him that's allowed him to really push his career forward to this point?
The first thing we did with Dom, we showed him some video of not only when he was at Kansas, but even going back to college, was Dom didn't appreciate how important it was for him to retain the ball in the middle of the pitch. He used to give it away. He'd flick it here, flick it there, and didn't really have any importance. And I used to say to him, if you don't get hold of this one, we can't set the play up to get you the next one in the penalty area. And it was like a light went off in his head. And when you see Dom now battling and scrapping like he does, backing into people, I think that's from then. Because he understood then that if I can retain this one, and now we recycle it and it goes wide and I get back in the box, I have a chance to score. The biggest thing for Dom and for me is he wants to be a star. And he knows that if he keeps scoring, that gives him the highlight, the glory. But Dom's got an insatiable desire to be a star and score goals and want to be the star of the show. And, you know, I have great respect for him. I really do.
There's a view of center forwards. The word you just used was star. You have to have a personality to want to score goals, want to be the highlight. Does that make it harder to coach strikers? Does that change the way you have to work with them?
Not really. I think ultimately that through your work that you do with them, if they think, actually, I'm learning here. I'm starting to get opportunities. Because at the end of the day, the nature of these guys, you know, they want to be the star guy. You know, they want to be the guy who's on the back page of the newspapers and everything. So most of them will do what you think if it means I'm going to be the goal scorer. The other part about goal scorers that people underestimate is they are also the guys who take probably the most stick when it's not going well. So you have to have a certain thick skin of going, you know, putting all that behind you and not taking it too personal when it goes the other way, because we've all been there, 10 and 11 games without scoring a goal, and you're the guy who's getting it from the crowd. But it's part and parcel of the nature of the job, and you've got to try and shut that out and go, right, what are the basic core principles that I know? If I get in these spots at the right time, I will score goals. And that's what most of them do, the better ones anyway.
Angelo Rodriguez doesn't feel like a pure goal scorer.
No.
That's not what he seems to be. What is he to you? How can you best use him? How can you best get what you need out of him? Because you talk about getting stick. He got some stick last year.
Well, he did, and obviously it was never going to be easy following Christian, who was like, you know, the darling of the crowd up in Minnesota. You know, we were aware of that, and it was a difficult decision. But it was one that I thought that we had to take for the long term where we want to go. Completely different types of players. All the stuff that I spoke about, Christian is fantastic in the penalty area. Really good movement and a really good finish. You're very composed. The other stuff, Angelo Rodriguez gives us an opportunity to get from one end of the field to the other consistently. Great receiver of the ball. Great with his back to goal. What we have to do now is start to work on things going on around him. I honestly believe that this year, if he stays fit, he will get 15 goals. Because even in the short period of time that we had him, he scored a few goals, but he had 2 and 3 chances nearly every game.
You mentioned Mason Toy, Abu Dhanlani, another young forward under you. What's their future? What are you hoping for from them?
A little bit different in the stage of their career and their development. One of my biggest disappointments of last year was the fact that we couldn't keep Abu consistently fit. It's something that we've spoke about. I think we have to take maybe some responsibility for certain parts of that, but he does also. You know, I've just spoke to you about having certain traits and certain... Abu's got everything. He really has. He can score incredible goals off the dribble. He can get things off the goalkeeper. This is going to be a really big year for him. We've been through that. And if we can keep him fit and healthy, we'll get a guy who can score consistently in the MLS. I don't have any qualms about that. Mason's a little bit different. Now, he is a learning process. You know, people forget that when we had him last year, the year before, he was playing high school football. You know, getting the ball on the halfway line, dribbling 5 men and scoring. He thought that was what it was going to be like. It's not like that. And the higher up he goes, now he's starting to learn all the little nuances of the position, of timing. I have to end up here at the right moment. And he's working hard at it. He's another one. He wants to be a star. He works every day. Nearly every day I look out of my office in the afternoon, he's out there doing something in and around the goal. So he wants it badly enough. Now he's just got to start taking it all in, the information in, and being able to deliver it at the right time.
Last question for you, Coach. A lot of good center forwards in this league. You said you watch basically every goal that's scored in the world.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite player to watch as a goal scorer in this league, and why?
I would have said Villa. I love Bradley Wright Phillips, but I think Joseph Martinez at this minute has got a bit of everything. He can score from the halfway line by pulling away from people with his pace. Fantastic movement in the box. And for a guy who's not over big, he's got a great spring, great leap. But, you know, we put a video together for our guys of Joseph in the penalty area, always in between the two centre-backs. The centre-backs want to close in on him. Then he's across the front of him. He's got really good movement. And I know from me playing up front myself, if you're our size, you have to have good movement, because that's going to be the difference maker, because you're not going to out-physical people. You know, you get people like Angelo Rodriguez who can actually just stand in the middle of the box and hold people off and still get efforts to go. When you're not that, you don't have them physical attributes, your movement has to be really good.
10 minutes with Minnesota United head coach Adrian Heath. Time's up. Thanks,
cheers.
Coach.
Cheers, fellas.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. That was Adrian Heath on forwards. We got Ben Olsen on a club being revitalized. DC United coming up on the next bump. But first, MLS news. But actually, we got a little bit of a – is it a Pravda situation going on
I
here?
I mean, I think it's a pandering situation. This is like a Bobby Warshaw type of pander that we're seeing. It was the Tyler Adams. We said it in the first segment.
I said it in the first segment,
named Man of the Match Day for the Bundesliga. Well – that was only from the Bundesliga's English-language Twitter feed. They call Tyler Adams the man of the match day.
Oh, sneaky. The
German-language Twitter feed has nothing about that. The website has nothing about that either. I mean, I respect it. It's a Bobby Warshaw-level pander.
That was content built for us.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll get to more Tyler Adams in the mailbag, 401-206-0-MLS. The big moves right now in MLS is Sebastian Giovinco, the Atomic Ant. Is he on the brink of a move? Reportedly, Al Hilal is interested in Saudi Arabia. Reportedly, he had left the training camp and left the hotel to go seal a move. Well, turns out that wasn't exactly true. People cleaned up those reports, and he went back to California to check on his leg. He's experiencing some tightness. Definitely not getting a medical, though. For sure not a medical. This is predictable because Sebastian Giovinco has 1 year left on his contract, and he would like to sign a new contract. Toronto FC, maybe not as enthusiastic as he might be, and certainly not for the same number that he's been on, because, I mean, look, let's be honest, that was a massive number. So what should both parties do? Sebastian Giovinco, I understand. He's trying to negotiate. He's trying to get as much money as he can, whether it's from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, wherever it might be, or he's trying to get it from Toronto. It seems to me like he would like to stay in Toronto if he could. But come on, this is a point of career where you got to get your money. You got to 100%.
And he knows that this is the year. He's in a contract negotiation. He has to play well. He has to be healthy. And he also has to show that there's outside interest. So he's going to have to push every one of these offers out onto the table. And we know that the way it's been discussed with us, with Toronto FC folks, is that Josie and Giovinco are going to be more involved in negotiations probably throughout the year than Bradley is. Whether that's them being more involved with what their agent's doing or their agent being more involved talking from this moment on rather than waiting till later in the year to figure it out. That's what we've heard.
Yeah, so, or potentially having more interest to then leverage.
Yeah. So, well, I think Bradley could have interest. He just would have to – I don't think he's going to move to Italy again.
Right.
At this point,
well, that's
in his
what I'm
career.
Saying. Especially for Giovinco, there's a foreign interest element right. that he can use as a crowbar.
So he has to. I also agree with you that I think in an ideal world, he'd like to get paid and stay in Toronto. I don't know that number is going to exist. Yeah. So at some point, he's going to have to decide if he wants to leave and get paid that number or if he wants to stay and get paid a lower number. I don't know that the outside interest really changes that for Toronto.
Yeah, I think that's the strong point for Toronto. Their negotiating position is, hey, if you've got that offer, if somebody comes to us here and says we want to buy Giovinco, okay, now we just wiped off this off the books. We aren't committed. We don't have this big decision to be made anymore. Now there's all of a sudden a little bit more clarity to the Josie Altidore situation that we can work with. And we don't know what we're going to get from you this year. It could be game-breaking Sebastian Giovinco, which still exists and is extremely powerful and awesome. It could also be kind of disinterested, sometimes hurt, Giovinco.
Yeah, well, the injuries are one thing. I think when he's healthy, he has shown that he has the quality, even as he's lost a step, to be a difference maker.
But is it at the level of investment that you're now still making?
Yeah.
This isn't MVP 3-4 years ago where it was just like best player in the league, hands down, no matter what.
But the other thing you have to consider if you're Toronto FC is, for the number you're offering him, are you going to be able to go out and acquire a new player who's going to come in and make a difference? Because they won't spend the way they've already spent on Giovinco for the next guy. So is an older Giovinco a better player than the new player that you're going to bring in? And I think that's going to be a serious question to consider, because transfer fees, what age you're going to get them at, and then how long you're going to have them is something that you need to consider in terms of the next guy, which, once again, won't be at the Atlanta United level. It won't be maybe at a Carlos Vela investment level. Like, it's going to be lower than those numbers.
I mean, that basically sums it up. I do think they want to start playing that game, though. I do think they want to go after the Diego Rossis and Jesus Medinas of the world and start not just, you know, hopefully winning if you're a Toronto fan, but flipping those guys down the road for a substantial profit. Like, they have that ambition in Toronto. Giovinco is... If he's going to get sold, it's going to be now or never. Like, if he re-signs with Toronto FC, that's the rest of his career. I would be surprised if they would want to commit DP money to him for the rest of his career, given, you know, 32, I'm not going to say oft injured. He's played over 2,000 minutes each of his four seasons in MLS, and he was great in CONCACAF Champions League last year, but he's not as reliable game in, game out, as he was in 15 and 16.
When he was getting off planes and hitting free kicks from Italy.
Yeah, right?
I think they'd still have to pay him DP money. There's just no way. He does
100%
not.
100% DP,
if the
offer is
on the table and you're like, look, we're going to make you a TAM player at 1.25, you're going to get a special Italian hand gesture right back at you. Deservedly so, I think. Given his pedigree, given his accomplishments, he is a DP hands down. Now then it's a matter of, do you want to have him and Josie at those ages on DP contracts? Because that's what both are going to want.
But the DP, I don't think the designated player spot is the issue. The issue is, how much does MLSE want to pay this player? Because you're talking about, now you're coming straight out of your pocket. And so I don't think there's any question that he's a designated player for this team. It's just, are they going to pay him $6 million
no,
a year?
No, they will not.
And is he going to stay for 1.5 to 2?
I wouldn't if I was him.
Why?
Because
honestly, dude, I'd pay you $2 million to live in Toronto, so I'm the wrong person to
look,
ask.
I mean, there are reports he will make more than that if he goes to Saudi Arabia. That's the whole
but
point.
Is his family
going
to move with him
country.
To Saudi Arabia? How long is he going to live
there?
That's the question. Does he want to move to Saudi Arabia? It's probably, if there are going to be substantial offers, I'm talking like $4 million or more, they're going to come from Saudi Arabia or China or maybe Japan.
Or the UAE.
How much would it take for you if you're Toronto FC?
Middle East, I guess we'll say.
To sell him. Is there a number that you're saying it has to be this?
Not at all.
Or
if you
saying,
can get something and you know he's not going to re-sign for the number you think is reasonable, because in the summer he can sign a pre-contract and he's gone for free. So if you get it's unfortunately similar to Victor Vasquez. At his age, if you're getting a legitimate offer to make money off of him, then and you don't
what
think
if,
you're going to re-sign
him. What if it's
him,
from Cruz Azul or Tigres?
I think they'd sell him.
I don't know. Interesting stuff going down. Red Bulls and Kaku. I feel like we walked our way through this.
Well, this is now the same conversation because you say Cruz Azul and Tigres now.
Now you're talking about regional rivals.
Right.
You're talking about somebody who might stand in your way.
In CCL.
So it seems like the Red Bulls have a couple options here. If you listen to the show, if you pay attention, if you're on MLS Reddit or MLSsoccer.com, if you live the life, you know what's going down right now with Kaku. He wants out. He's tweeting eagle emojis. And saying, like, you know, God's will, it will be done. His agent is saying crazy, historically, like, questionable stuff in the media, trying to force a deal.
Technically, it was an accurate quote.
It was accurate.
It was
maybe
not
it was
for the correct situation.
Yes, maybe contextually.
But it was
actually misapplied.
Quote.
They won out. They want to go to Club America. there's a question mark here for the Red Bulls. You signed him a year ago. You have him on a very friendly contract in MLS terms. About $700K was what you paid him last year. You invested a significant amount, depending on who you believe, between $4.5 million and about $6.5 million. I think we all agree that's probably closer to the $6.5 million side. You will not get much back, if anything, if you sell him for a certain number that is not above your acquisition costs. And Huracan also has 20% interest in the player. So that complicates a lot as well. And then, as you said, it's a regional rivalry. But if Kaku doesn't want to come back, your hand's forced a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's smiling in all your videos on Instagram, Red Bulls, but he's tweeting that he doesn't want to be there. So your options are what? You could hold on to him and say, you know, tough luck. You signed a contract with us. We have CCL coming up. We think we're a better team with you. Buckle down, figure it out, be professional so you're ready for Copa America. And then if we get a good thing after that, we'll sell you because the market, in all likelihood, would be bigger if you think European teams are going to be interested. If you don't think that that is going to happen or that's a risk or one you're not willing to take, then maybe you sell now, but you can't really sell at $8 million probably and have your fan base happy with you and get the sort of return on investment that we've been talking about with Toronto FC and Atlanta United. But then maybe you wash your hands of an issue and you survive through CCL as you did without Kaku in large part last year and then make a signing in the summer because, again, the market's a little easier at that time for you. I don't know if there's any other options here. Maybe re-sign him?
Well, that's the third scenario, is give him a pay raise and say, we will sell you in the summer if you are worth X. Or we will sell you in the summer after you play well in Copa America. Because if he gets a raise, you think he comes back. He probably comes back happier. He doesn't lose face. You don't lose face.
Do his teammates come back happier?
I don't know.
If you're Aaron Long, defender of the year, captain of the U.S. national team.
You just got a new contract, right?
Did he?
Oh, no. Sorry, Tim Parker. Well, yeah, my bad.
I mean, this is also a big issue right now for the Red Bulls. Something's got to happen with that contract. No, I mean, it has to.
Yeah, Long has to get.
I mean, you have to, because if you think, you just have to.
Yeah.
He's making like 80 grand.
So if you're Aaron Long, who else is upset, though? Honestly.
Kamar Lawrence just signed a new contract. Easily the best left back in the league. Tim Parker.
But he just signed a deal.
So did Kaku.
I guess.
Every player.
But Tim Parker doesn't have Club America offering, you know, whatever million-dollar transfer offer, right?
I mean, have his, you know, what is it, Ron Waxman? Go out and you know.
Drum up some interest.
This is a game that has been played before.
Well, it's the only way to get a TAM contract if you're a domestic center back, no?
Absolutely.
I mean, they had to have played that game a little bit
Absolutely.
To get him that money.
So like, this, you know, there are political issues here. I could see Kaku, like, if he's making, what, $750,000? If you bump him up to $1 million, maybe he's super happy about it. But then you have to worry about 29 other guys in that locker room. It's tough. The other thing, we're talking about Kaku going to Copa America this summer as if it's a done deal. Who's the head coach of Paraguay?
Juan Carlos Osorio.
Well, why do you think that hurts him?
I don't think Juan Carlos Osorio is in love with MLS. I think he was pretty open after Mexico was knocked out of the World Cup about wanting thinking Mexican players absolutely have to go overseas in order to improve.
That is the most class JCO, like, post-World Cup. Like
deflection.
Yes. Oh God. That's exactly how you would you would write
Carlos
that.
Vela,
would like,
Carlos Vela was not the problem.
Yeah, like, that's a little
for
too
Mexico
cliche even
summer.
For you, just,
you
know, like,
so, but like, maybe he's in. It wouldn't
maybe?
Shock me if he's in. If he's in Kaku's ear. And who's the other player in MLS that Club America has been rumored?
Hector Villalba, also a Paraguayan international, who's
I'm
another
just
player
saying.
In MLS, a Paraguayan who's trying to make his move out.
Yeah.
Miguel,
you know who JCO really likes?
Christian
Piojo Herrera. Not.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know. I think part of that is just, one, there's already the that narrative already existed in Mexico, so easy
for
one
sure.
for him to hop on. And the other one with Mexico is also they all stay in Mexico. Every player for the Paraguayan national team plays, quote-unquote, overseas. Or, sorry, outside the country.
Right.
Whether it's in Europe, in the Middle East, in Asia, or across South America, or Mexico. So, like, it's a different landscape for the Paraguayan national team that, you know, he's working with. And he doesn't have that deep a pool. And, like, eight dudes are MLS players.
Regardless, it is a risk for the Red Bulls. If they hold on to him, if they sign him to a new contract, when you've got
– I don't know
if
that
it's
it is.
$8 million on the table?
I don't know that it is. Because
that may never come back.
Yeah, but if you pay him a decent contract, right? More than he's making, but still what you consider reasonable or controllable, and he doesn't get sold in the summer. Now you have Kaku on your team.
Sure, but now you have a $6 million investment that maybe never gets
if
flipped.
If you win MLS Cup, that's your investment.
I agree.
If you win CCL, that's your investment.
How special is Kaku in your mind?
I don't know. I think he's pretty good. I think he fits their system really well.
I don't know he's pretty
well.
Good.
Well,
he
Doyle, like,
system.
Tore him into pieces yeah. yesterday in the group chat.
I did not tear him into pieces. I just said he's not a $10 million player. If yeah. you watch him play, is he a $10 million player on the global market? He's a good little player. $10 million? 12? Which is what the Red Bulls asked?
Yeah.
It's a tough one right now. We'll see what happens. I think the one thing that benefits Red Bulls is Austria. They've yeah. got built-in bad cop.
Yep.
So easy for them to be like, hey, not us. Hands are tied. Go talk to Austria, man. They want this money. You got to figure it out with them. Some other news here before we go to break here and into this Ben Olsen interview. Fire signed Johan Kabelhoff to a couple-year contract. And David Ostad, which, you know, do what you got to do. You need bodies.
Don't bury the lead in Amando Moreno.
Well, that Christian Martinez, if you really want
no,
to take
Amando
it
Moreno is the lead.
Cisco. What is Amando Moreno? I haven't seen Amando Moreno dye his hair once in a
He's going to score 10. He's going to have 10 and 7 this year.
Okay.
And they also signed Andre Reynolds.
Homegrown.
Homegrown left back. Maybe a year away from getting MLS minutes, but given that roster, maybe
he's
a starter
day one right
That
now.
Said, Andrew Gutman has not officially signed with
this
Celtic yet, and I have heard rumors. I've not been able to nail this down, but I've heard rumors that his work permit for Scotland was denied. That might open the door for Chicago to sign Gutman as a homegrown. If they do, I think he's an automatic starter.
Who, real quick, if he comes back and won't sign with Chicago, who do you see come in and try and get his homegrown rights?
Pretty much every team in the league needs a left back, right? He would make a lot of sense. Just about everybody.
Yeah,
I could see the Galaxy though. You know, he's like he's a passing left back. He likes to get on the ball. Scalotto always used that down in Argentina. I could see him fitting there.
If they have enough TAM to,
if they have enough
or
TAM.
Whatever to go get him to
Vancouver. Vancouver has a ton of salary cap space, and I think a lot of money because of all the the trades and sales that they've done. And they have a need.
Yeah.
So I think the caps would make a lot of sense.
Yep. We'll see what happens here. I did not know that, but I've been watching and I had not seen that announcement. Whereas it looks like the Polster deal will get done because he did get his work permit.
Yeah. And to be clear, like the press over there and the fans over there are still treating it like it's absolutely going to get done. I may be entirely wrong about this, but I've heard enough whispers from enough reliable sources that this is at the very least still up in the air.
Celtic really doing a favor to the Irish pubs across the United States right now.
Timothy Weah. Weah,
Manny Perez.
Oh, yes. All right.
I mean, Weah's what, had two and two?
Uh-huh.
Three, I think. Two and three now.
Two goals in three games?
Yeah, he started this weekend. I don't think he scored this weekend.
Best player in Scotland.
All right, let's go to break. In the bump here, we've got Ben Olsen. Enjoy that. We'll be on the other side with a mailbag. 10 minutes with Ben Olsen, the head coach of DC United. Ben, welcome.
Thanks.
What a beard you got grown here.
It's pretty serious.
Is this a full off-season beard?
I'm not sure. I'm just going to let it play out.
Did anyone challenge you and be like, hey, you'd look good in a beard or you have to grow a beard?
No, I've been with the owners and GM, and no one's really told me to cut it off, so – I think I'm a green light for now.
You got the touch of gray here. I don't want to call you out on
just
that.
Just down the middle.
What do you think that comes from?
RFK, being in that, being going to work at RFK for the last decade.
Terror every time you turn a corner. What will be on the other side?
That'll do it. Yeah.
But let's be real. It kept you on your toes.
It did.
It has. It has. It's a great place.
It is a wonderful place. The topic with you today is the renaissance of a club. DC United, what a legendary club it is in Major League Soccer. You've seen it through a lot of different iterations and eras, and you remain as head coach with rumors and reports out there that you will be signing a new contract. How have you, before we get to the Renaissance part, how would you explain your long-term, I don't know if I want to use the word survival, but
your
long-term tenure?
Are you the longest tenured coach?
Yes. No, I think Peter. I would say Peter. I think it's luck. I think I've certainly got a mulligan or two from having some equity built as a player. But I've also think more times than not we've reached the postseason, and as much as they've been loyal to me, and I'd like to think I've returned returned that favor with punching above our weight, making the playoffs, and having a competitive team most of the years. But I feel very, as I said, I always feel lucky and humble to still be a part of the club that I played for a decade. I think it's coming in here around 21, 22 years that I've been a part of the organization. And it's very rare. It's, it's not lost on me.
My God, how good did last year feel? The second half of it.
It was wonderful. It was a wonderful stretch. It was a wild ride. Being relevant again in the city and having the buzz, the positive buzz in the nation's capital around our team, and people that were really proud to be associated with our club for the first time in let's face it, a while. For me, it was really, really rewarding.
You talked about equity. How did you build that this year without disrespecting the great history that the club has, right? You weren't rebranding. It was kind of like refreshing.
Yeah. We didn't have to spend a lot of time on that because we've been waiting for this for so long. The fact that it was downtown, I think, really helped. I think the signing of Wayne kind of doubled down on the stadium, gave some name recognition and a player for people to get excited about. I think the way we went about it and the foundation we set on how we want to play at home with an exciting style, it was again a bit of a perfect storm. To again set the right foundation at Audi Field ends prematurely, and it was one of the worst losses that I've ever taken as a coach or a player. That's what type of emotion was going on during this stretch inside me, because it was one of those years that just felt like we could do something special, and that to go out that way in our own building after all that we put in the 3 months prior was it was tough. It took a couple weeks for me to get over.
That's the worst moment. What was the best moment? What's the moment from 2018 that you kind of reflect on most, or that was most poignant for you or most special?
I think making the playoffs. The game that secured it. I remember looking around midway through the season, we weren't doing so hot, as the standings kept showing me. We were playing well, when we were scoring a lot of goals, and we were actually a fun team to watch, but we were just bleeding goals. We were a long shot, and for that now to be preached about in every game from the second Audi Field open was a must win, to hang in there and keep chugging along and moving up the standings and to finally get into the postseason, which was a goal of ours, the only goal we could really have, was amazing. And to watch the fans, I guess not so much of a moment, but the fans from day one at Audi Field, the mood, the atmosphere in there, to when we made the playoffs, the change was remarkable. The first game was at Audi Field. I don't know if you guys were there.
We were there.
It wasn't very impressive. No. It was awkward.
Yeah, it was. Had all the issues with the supporters still going on, and they didn't feel like they knew what was going. Just felt off.
And it felt off to me because it just didn't feel right. It woke up when Yamil scored the goal, which was another great moment that we had. It was a fantastic goal and kind of woke the crowd up a little bit. But each game, it got a little bit better. And towards the end, in particular the Columbus game, it was as good as an atmosphere as I've ever been a part of. So that kind of that movement and how the atmosphere that we created progressed was really really impressive.
Where you've been around this league a while, where does DC United stand as a club right now in the echelon of Major League Soccer?
I still think we have a ways to go. I still think in a lot of ways we're digging out of being kind of stagnant and in a league that everyone is moving at a really rapid pace. But we're very competitive, and I think we've put together a team that can compete any – each week, as we showed the last couple months. I know it's a different animal now with the season's different, and we'll go on the road more. But I believe in our group. I put us in the mix. I put us, in that middle tier right now, and a team still trying to compete for the postseason. And if we can get better in a few different areas, I think it's a potential team that can make a good run at this thing.
A lot of good coaches in this league, a lot of new names coming in. Not a lot of TMZ stars.
No.
Like yourself.
That's just me. Yeah, I'm the only one.
You became a staple there for a little while.
Yeah.
You had fun with it.
Well, I didn't plan on having fun with it. I got bum-rushed by some cat at the Dulles Airport. I didn't know we had, TMZ in our area. So I had a quick education on that and was taken aback. We didn't know what the Wayne factor looked like off the field necessarily, and that was really the only one that was really the only time we've been followed. It hasn't been a big deal traveling with Wayne, but that was a funny moment, I suppose.
Wayne Rooney, what a change he brought to your club, to the squad, to Lucho Acosta in particular. The tackle, the goals, the contributions, the way he put his head down. How did you approach managing him from the start, and how did maybe he surprise you?
Well, he surprised me in that he did. He took very little managing. He made my life very easy. He was exactly who we thought he was. And soccer's a very small world. If with a couple phone calls, you can speak to former players and former coaches and find out a lot about anybody in the world. And it was the same thing over and over. Highly competitive, loves to play the game, good leadership, good with young guys, and wants to win. And what coach doesn't want that? And he came in and again was exactly that. And again, good leader, gave him the captain band very shortly after he landed. And he was his ability to elevate others around him, I might have underestimated a little bit. I didn't think he could do that quickly. It was a perfect storm, though. There's going to be a lot of talk about Wayne and his influence. And don't get me wrong, he was certainly the catalyst. But there was some, Bill also comes into play, and Russell's now healthy, and Junior Moreno's healthy again. So there were all these, there were always things playing out. There's some tactical switches that we made because of Wayne coming and how we thought we could be successful with him. So that became, and it was nice that Wayne took all the press for a guy like Lucho and a guy like Bill. Those guys I've been relying on too heavy for young guys to shoulder the expectations that were on them over the last couple of years. So I think they really benefited as well from a little bit of an exhale. It's like, okay, let's follow Wayne. And that was behind the scenes. I think that's one of the components of why the others around him were able to step up.
When you look at this club and the future of it, Loudoun United, a new training facility that's long overdue. I mean, I remember being at training ahead of that first game at Audi, and I'm used to it. I've been there a lot. But I see Wayne Rooney sitting there on the bench, and there's, like, dragonflies rolling around, and there's the porta-potty. I mean, what you guys are
while you're pinging free kicks, of course, in the top
you
corner.
You were smashing.
Yeah, I played well that day. I'm showing off for you guys.
This club is about to has taken a massive step, but it's about to take even more steps. As you look at the future, and, your future seems to be pretty secure, what do you see? What's the ceiling? Where is it going? What can it be? How far –
Yeah, this kind of renaissance, as you guys put it, it's been slower than we've all wanted, but it's happening, and we're in the midst of it. And the stadium was the first domino to fall, as we've been talking about for years, and now some more infrastructure to follow with the Loudoun United and the training facility. All these things are vital now to an organization in the MLS, and for us now to be with coming to a close on a lot of that is super exciting for everyone that's been involved with the club. It will allow us now to be more competitive on the field and do things in a different way than we've had over the last decade. And as I said, for a guy who's been around this club for 21 years, it means a lot to me, and I'm just humbled to be a part of it and looking forward to the future.
Ben Olsen, Renaissance man. Thank you for your time, Coach.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by Connell. Into the mailbag, 401-206-0-MLS. Please text us, extratime@mlssoccer.com via email. Let's get right into it. Sam from New York. Is it possible for MLS teams to sell DP slots, just like how international slots can be sold? No, Sam. You cannot trade your designated player slots. The whole point of it is that they would like you to fill those. And you have TAM, so you should conceivably be able to trade down.
Before there was three, you could, right?
Yeah, there was a time.
You could acquire the third one.
Mm-hmm. There was a time. But with TAM and with the fact that you have three and the way the rosters are constructed and the salary cap works, you would really be contributing to some different weighted rosters, let's say. But hey, Atlanta United, LA Galaxy, they might like that right now. Matt from Boston with Alfonso Davies making his Bayern debut today. Here's a question for the whole gang. Who's the better player 5 years from now? Alfonso Davies or Christian Pulisic? Throw in Diego Lainez to make it interesting. I'm going to add in Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, and Tim Weah. Well,
wasn't the point that it's three different CONCACAF nations, though?
Nah, I don't know if that was the point, but I'm
I feel like
it was
the point. And what's the name of the Jamaican kid at Leverkusen?
Leon Bailey.
Yeah. So there you go. So now we have four different CONCACAF nations, four wingers, right? Lainez, Pulisic, Davies, and Bailey. I think of those four, my money's on Davies. I think Davies is just spectacular.
My money of those four is on Bailey because I've seen him at that level basically dominate.
I was going to say, he certainly has more first team sort of like, I've done it, been there, this has happened. Oy.
But
playing. Yeah, Pulisic going to Chelsea, which is a huge complication in any development curve.
Absolutely. What are the chances that Sarri is even going to be the coach when Pulisic gets there?
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't even recruit him according to the reports there, so who knows? I don't know, man, because Davies isn't exactly in an ideal situation either, although it looks like Bayern's going to go young.
Yep.
So Yanez is in the best situation, and we have seen a understanding from quote-unquote big teams about what bringing a Mexican player into your team does from like a business point of view. I think there's a reason that teams have tried to push to bring in Chicharito, not just because he scores goals, because he sells jerseys.
Yeah.
And Yanez will do the same thing. Chucky Lozano is going to do
Yanez.
The same.
I think it's Lainez, because Lainez. It's only one L.
Yeah,
yeah, Lainez.
Chucky Lozano is going to be better probably than everyone we just named.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is.
He's already 24, and
he's 23, I think.
Well, he's 3 or 4 years older than Pulisic, and he's not as good.
Do you think Diego Lainez is Diego Lainez is in the best situation for his development? Being at Betis, being with Guardado, being in La Liga, which, you know,
fits
is at least comfortable for him, given that he has his countrymen there with him. A little bit of a smaller club may not be, you know, Chelsea may just buy in over Pulisic. They may never play him.
I don't
they just
think,
wipe
by him. The way, can we, like, relax with the Pulisic's the most expensive player, the second most expensive player ever signed by Chelsea?
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just the, like, oh, Chelsea just always signs guys for $57 million. I think a lot of people have this assumption because Manchester United has started to do that over the last few years.
Chelsea don't do that.
Chelsea don't, and they don't have deep teams. Right now, Willian, I think, is 6 months away from being able to sign a pre-contract or whatever, you know, next season. Pedro's 32. It sounds like Adui's going to go to Germany or leave somewhere. And so that's like Hazard on the wing and like Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who's a center mid. I don't think Pulisic's going into a bad situation, and I'm not actually – I wish he was there now. I'm not that worried about it. I just don't know if Pulisic's going to be the best player in the region at his
peak. He might not live up to that $70 million price tag, but I don't think it's going to be because Chelsea buy over him.
Okay. McKinney, Adams, and Weah, which of those three would you say has the best chance to break into that group? The Davies, Pulisic.
It's tough because McKinney and Adams play different positions. You know, like it's always tough, but based on, I mean, I like all three. I don't even like. It's tough to pick between these guys because they're all so good at such a young age, and every hurdle that gets thrown in front of them, they take. Like Weston McKennie is starting for a Champions League team at age 20 in central midfield.
He started center forward, which he doesn't know how to play.
And like Tyler Adams walked into the lineup for RB Leipzig at defensive midfielder, played his second week at the club, was excellent for a team that's going to be in the Champions League
and has depth at that position, which is what surprised me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dem has been run into the ground.
But they also
year.
Bought a guy from Austria, Red Bull Leipzig, or whatever, Red Bull, that plays the exact same position as 20 or 21 years old. And
so, like, it's tough to choose between the three. In terms of, like, capturing the imagination of the fan base, always bet on the guy who scores goals. And so far, Tim Weah scores goals.
All right, there you have it. We're getting out of here.
No. Anders from Seattle says, please talk about the Nani rumors on ETR.
What Nani rumors?
To what team? Or is it just MLS?
To Besiktas?
It's been reported. Yeah, right? It's been reported, rumored on Twitter, PortugueseSoccer.com, and I think a couple other places. Nani is reportedly being shopped around Major League Soccer. I do have a source on this that says, this has happened before. Nobody wants him.
I love when the rumors say, like, a team and MLS. Like, the league.
Right.
Where it's like, well, there are teams in this league, and the teams do actually have to play the players. So normally, when you say that, it means no one has actually ever reached out for this player.
You may have gotten with the league. They might have sent out an email, and then it might have been just straight crickets.
Yep.
Like, Anani? Cool. Seen this email before. And they're like, straight in the trash. They're like, put them in the junk mail.
And they're like, we're not sure. He might sign in China, MLS, or this specific team he's in negotiations with right now.
That's like the next step for MLS is get to the point where the actual teams in MLS. And to be fair, the Galaxy and NYCFC in Atlanta.
And they're never really. Yeah. It's never the Galaxy.
Ever.
Can Nani play center forward? Because NYCFC aren't taking any. To preseason, they got like five goalkeepers.
He can play winger,
That's what Dome wants.
There you go, Maxi Morales, false nine. That's it for us. Hit us up. We'll see you on Thursday. That's when the transfer window closes in Europe, by the way.